He's such a brave lad.
Launch the True Stream. Hey everyone, welcome back to True Stream Oasis. I'm your host, Amos Ridley, and this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. Even though we may be sitting in much darkness, the Lord will be our light, and we will be thankful for that. Today we're going to take a little break from the usual rambling that I do, and I picked up an audio clip from a lecture done by a man named Professor Walter Veith, V-E-I-T-H. This guy's great. I really like him. He's with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but he is extremely knowledgeable about the New World Order and the all the information and background of the Illuminati. So I thought this would be a nice break. It'll give me a break here and give you guys a chance to check him out and check his information out. This is a lecture that he gave on the New World Order, and I know you guys are going to completely enjoy it and be much more knowledgeable on the other side of it. It's got two parts to it, so I'm going to air the first part today because it's probably about 100 minutes long, and I just figured that'd be too much to put in for one sitting, too much of a meal here. So we're going to break it up into two parts, and I will air the next part on this part two in a couple of days. Give this one a chance for people to download and listen to it. But first, I want to read some scripture to you guys because it's thy word is a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path, and it's a good thing to put the word in there. Some of us sometimes with our busy days, we don't take the time to stop and read the word, so I'll do that for you. It's I picked a section today from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 11. With this New World Order theme, I thought this would be a pretty good section. You know, the Lord talks a lot about conspiracy and how his people are in rebellion against him, and how his people conspire against him. Just read Psalm chapter 2. That's probably one of the most famous ones and for that. And also Psalm 64, which is an awesome psalm. I've made that my psalm for the year in addition to Psalm 119. But there's, you know, when you dig into it and you get to the point where you're not seeing this as just some ancient text written to ancient people, although it was, it'll really pop out at you. It'll really become alive and stand out to you and be really, really effective in your application for today once you understand that it is the living, breathing Word of God. So let me start reading Jeremiah chapter 11, and we're going to finish this whole chapter. It says, this is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Listen to the terms of this covenant, and tell them to the people of Judah, to those who live in Jerusalem. Tell them that this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Cursed is the man who does not obey the terms of this covenant, the terms that I commanded your forefathers when I brought them out of Egypt, out of the iron smelting furnace. I said, obey me, and do everything I command you, and you will be my people, and I will be your God. Then I will fulfill the oath I swore to your forefathers, to give them a land flowing with milk and honey, the land you possess today. I answered, amen, Lord. The Lord said to me, proclaim all these words in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. Listen to the terms of this covenant and follow them. From the time I brought your forefathers up from Egypt until today, I warned them again and again, saying, obey me. But they did not listen or pay attention. Instead, they followed the stubbornness of their evil hearts. So I brought on them all the curses of the covenant that I had commanded them to follow, but that they did not keep. Then the Lord said to me, there is a conspiracy among the people of Judah and those who live in Jerusalem. They have returned to the sins of their forefathers, who refused to listen to my words. They have followed other gods to serve them. Both the house of Israel and the house of Judah have broken the covenant that I made with their forefathers. Therefore, this is what the Lord says, I will bring on them a disaster they cannot escape. Although they cry out to me, I will not listen to them. The towns of Judah and the people of Jerusalem will go and cry out to the gods to whom they burn incense. But they will not help them at all when disaster strikes. You have as many gods as you have towns, O Judah, and the altars you have set up to burn incense to that shameful god Baal are as many as the streets of Jerusalem. Do not pray for this people, nor offer any plea or petition for them, because I will not listen when they call to me in the time of their distress. What is my beloved doing in my temple, as she works out her evil schemes with many? Can consecrated meat avert your punishment? When you engage in your wickedness, then you rejoice. The Lord called you a thriving olive tree, with fruit beautiful in form. But with the roar of a mighty storm, he will set it on fire, and its branches will be broken. The Lord Almighty, who planted you, has decreed disaster for you. Because the house of Israel and the house of Judah have done evil, and provoked me to anger by burning incense to Baal. Because the Lord revealed their plot to me, I knew it. For at that time he showed me what they were doing. I had been like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter. I did not realize that they had plotted against me, saying, Let us destroy the tree and its fruit. Let us cut him off from the land of the living, that his name be remembered no more. But, O Lord Almighty, you who judge righteously and test the heart and mind, let me see your vengeance upon them, for to you I have committed my cause. Therefore, this is what the Lord says about the men of Anathoth, who are seeking your life and saying, Do not prophesy in the name of the Lord, or you will die by our hands. Therefore, this is what the Lord Almighty says, I will punish them. Their young men will die by the sword, their sons and daughters by famine. Not even a remnant will be left to them, because I will bring disaster on the men of Anathoth in the year of their punishment. And that ends the reading of the word of the Lord from Jeremiah chapter 11. I find it very interesting that in Jeremiah chapter 11 verse 9, that he says, Then the Lord said to me, There is a conspiracy among the people of Judah and those who live in Jerusalem. So to all you people out there that say there's no conspiracy, in your face, okay? Because it says it right here in Jeremiah 11:9. God said it, and I don't think anybody out there wants to argue with the Lord, okay? There are conspiracies going on. His people do conspire against him and against other people. In fact, Jeremiah was talking about that he had been like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter. He said, I did not realize that they had plotted against me. He had no clue. He was innocent, you know, and that's kind of how I felt, you know, for 32 years or so of my life. I knew there was corruption going on and that there were some bad things going on, but I had no idea how deep the rabbit hole went. So I'm thinking that there's a lot of people out there that don't have a clue as to what's going on. So that's why I'm doing this podcast and trying to preach and get the word out there about what God says about the last days, and letting people know that there are people out there whose hearts are desperately wicked. They are conspiring. I think that sometimes, you know, people say in their own hearts, they're like, well, you know, I wouldn't do something like that. You know, I wouldn't go out into the forest and worship a stone owl and burn a effigy to it, you know, and I wouldn't be able to get up on in front of the television and just straight up bold-faced lie and smile like nothing's going on behind the scenes, you know, and I can understand that, and I think that's probably why a lot of people don't believe it, because they can't see, they wouldn't be able to do it, so they don't see how somebody else could do it, you know, but there are people out there whose consciences have been seared as with a hot iron, just like the Bible says. And I think that's what a lot of times what these rituals do, these initiation ceremonies into these secret societies do, is they burn the initiate's conscience so far and so bad it hardens them and burns them beyond the point of actually caring anymore. And that's how they can carry out these diabolical schemes and live in two realities, doing, you know, all this occultic stuff behind the scenes and then getting up and smiling pretty for the camera and just bold-faced lying. So, with that being said, you know, you guys just keep your eyes in your head, you know, as Solomon says, and watch and let no man deceive you in any way. So, I'm going to stop yapping here, and I'm going to hand the podcast off to Dr. Walter Veith. So you guys get your ears on and give this guy a listen and give him your attention.
We are now going to discuss this issue of a new world order. As we saw in Revelation chapter 17, the kings of the world give their power unto the beast. In the keys of this blood, Malachi Martin tells us that the greatest geopolitical giant of our age is the Pope. He says, on his trip to Poland, barely 8 months after his election, he signaled the opening of the millennium end game. He became the first of three players to enter the new geopolitical arena. He says that Pope John Paul would stride on now in the arena of this end game as something more than a geopolitical giant of his age. He was and remains the serene and confident servant of the grand design. This is Masonic signal language. Here is John Paul II with the Trilateral Commission. And here is John Paul II with B'nai B'rit, Jewish Freemasonry. This is a fascinating signal picture with him in the center controlling the most powerful think tanks in the world. Because that's what the signal tells us. We saw in Revelation chapter 17 already some pictures of the powers of the world giving themselves over to the papacy, Lech Walesa being honored for his work with the host in public. The Bush-Gorbachev summit in Malta, George Bush referred to as a gateway to the millennium of freedom, and it was heralded as the building of a new world. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause. Only the United States has both the moral standing and the means to back it up. So they want to create this new world order. Revelation chapter 13 said that the beast that comes up out of the earth would be the power that did it. Bush confirms that for us. By 1990, a peace prize went to Gorbachev for losing his country. A man of the decade he became, and the old symbols, which are Masonic symbols of the East German Empire, were removed. The communist emblem leaves. Pretoria News, August 20, 1999. A summit meeting with 63 countries about neoliberalism, and Fidel Castro gives a Masonic signal. Here he is with the papacy. All these so-called countries that are against what the establishment stands for are only against in the sense that they are playing the game of Hegelianism. Thesis, antithesis. But behind the scenes, they all belong to the same club. Let's just verify that. Fidel was significantly influenced by Jesuit father Armando Lorenzo and Alberto de Castro. De Castro admired Fancro. Fidel was very active in a Jesuit organization similar to the Boy Scouts, the Explorers. Wherever totalitarian movement erupts, whether communist or Nazi, a Jesuit can be found in the role of advisor or leader. In Cuba, it was Castro's father Armando Lorente. So forget about the idea that Cuba was anti-Pope. A Jesuit was behind the scenes. They were playing the game of thesis, antithesis. When tyrants fall in Romania and Panama and all these countries, these tyrants were put in place to create a system of fear and chaos, and then they are removed and the people are happy to give up their civil liberties. We've already seen this video here of the Pope who receives honor from Bill Clinton for his role in ending the communist empire.
2,400 of his faithful here to welcome him. He's waving to the crowd. Archbishop Ragalli is alongside the Pope as he shakes hands with the First Lady.
We honor you for helping to lead a revolution of values and spirit in Central Europe and the former Soviet Union, freeing millions to live by conscience, not coercion, and freeing all of us from the constant fear of nuclear war. Your Holiness, on behalf of all of us gathered here today, indeed on behalf of all the people of our beloved nation, we welcome you back to America.
Ladies and gentlemen, His Holiness Pope John Paul II and the Vice President of the United States and Archbishop.
Pope declares the European community heaven sent. Very fascinating. Konrad Adenauer, who was the German Chancellor at that particular time when this was being devised, well, he is to be declared a saint. Can you believe that? He is to be declared a saint for his work. Pope declares EU heaven sent. And saints at the moment, Roman Catholic principles, they are to be declared saints. Now, to bring about the European Union, they had Maastricht. Maastricht is a Roman Catholic little town in a Protestant country in the Netherlands. And the symbolism there was very interesting, the 12 stars. They represent also the 12 stars that you have in the book of Revelation, which they apply to Mary rather than to the woman in white. It is also fascinating that the European Union issued a poster which was posted all over Europe where they had the Tower of Babel under construction. Can you see that? This was posted all over Europe and the stars were upside down representing the goat of Mendes. This is Satanism. This is the new Tower of Babel. And the high French politicians said, "We are building a new Babel," which they emphasized with this poster, "and this time we will succeed." The new parliament of the European community is built like the Tower of Babel. In fact, it has a plaque on the inside or a poster which says precisely this. And it has these scaffolding to give the appearance that it is under construction. This is rather arrogant. This is the new European identity card. And if you look at it at the back and you turn it upside down, what do you see? You see the goat of Mendes. The horns are slightly modified to give another symbolism of the seat of the earth. But the inner facial features of the goat are very clearly discernible. And what these mean over here, I would rather not say. If we look at the high politicians of Europe, those that played the role in all of this, they are Masonic. That is a Masonic handshake between Schröder and Kohl, signifying the new Mason is taking over where the old Mason is leaving. So just as we saw that Kerry is a Skull and Bones member in America now, and the present president is a Skull and Bones member, it doesn't matter which one is going to win. So here too, Mason replaces Mason. Fingering the system, they're all showing that they're all part of the same system. When the Soviet Union fell, the new emblem that it adopted was this one, the double-headed eagle, Could you guess why? Well, the double-headed eagle is the symbol of Freemasonry, and it obviously shows who is in control. The queens, the kings of the world, as we have seen, all of them are high masons and subject to the Roman pontiff. And Islam, we did a whole lecture to show the intrigue of the Islamic religion and the Catholic religion that behind the scenes, controlled by the secret societies, they have one aim and one aim alone, subject to Rome. So what is all this war about with Islam? Who are these people who are pulling the strings in the world? And why are people being rubbed up between them? From the rock stars of the world, the Bonos of the world, to the political leaders of the world, everyone seems to be bowing down to the papal Caesar. From the east to the west, the Islamic world is currently being set up as the synthesis in the religious world, pitted against the Judeo-Christian culture as the antithesis, and then out of this must come a synthesis where all of them will unite. This is a website. There is the actual website underneath. And this one, I believe, fairly accurately says who's who in the zoo. Adam Weishaupt, Astor, Pike, Carnegie, DuPont, Harriman, Bertrand Russell, Ted Kennedy. These are the Illuminatis of yesteryear and today. George W. Bush, of course, he's a Skull and Bones member. That's a sub-organization of Chapter 322 of a German organization, the Illuminati, therefore. Bundy, Habsburg, Freeman, Teng Hui, Hillary Clinton, Alan Greenspan, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Wahlberg, these are the bankers in the system, the negotiators, Lord Carrington, Jimmy Carter, Henry Kissinger, Lord David Owen, Richard Holbrooke. These are 33 degree Freemasons, or Knights of Malta, or Bilderbergers, Committee of 300. They all belong to the same club. If we look at Franklin D. Roosevelt, Cecil Rhodes, Engels, all of these, Trotsky, Stalin, Marx, Hoover, all of their affiliations, Grand Orient Lodge, for example, Grand Orient Lodge, Lenin was Grand Orient Lodge, Truman 33 degree, Willy Brandt 33 degree, Winston Churchill. We've seen many of these before. Helmut Kohl, Committee of 300, François Mitterrand, 33 degree Freemason, He is not alive anymore. Yitzhak Rabin, Yasser Arafat, 33-degree Freemason. These are fascinating details. Shimon Peres, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Gerald Ford. I showed you Gerald Ford's signature where he signed for himself that he was a 33-degree Freemason. There it is. I photographed it in the lodge. And the Carters and these great political people in the world, the Schröders, the Netanyahus, the Gorbachevs, there is Saddam Hussein listed as a 33-degree Freemason. Now, that is somewhat strange, wouldn't you say? King Hussein, Al Gore, Tony Blair, all of these issues. Look at Saddam Hussein over there. Here's a picture of Saddam Hussein. And this is a picture that was beamed on national television during the war. During the war, of what he looked like. Now, they also said at that stage that they weren't sure whether this was pre-taped. That means it could have been pre-taped before the war even took place, because if they are insiders, they would know who's who and what is going to happen. Now, there is a very interesting rumor about this man. Have a look at his face, and have a look at the fact that he has no beard. The CIA, as well as the British Secret Service, said at the time it could be a double. It could be a double, but nevertheless, that is what was depicted. He has always looked like this. He's never had a beard. This is what he's looked like. Operation Iraqi Freedom, Saddam's double trouble. Opposition leader claims Hussein died of cancer in 1999. This was posted March 26, 2003. Muslim al-Assadi, a doctor living in exile in Iran, said he believes the real Saddam died in 1999 from cancer. The real Saddam died because he had cancer of the lymph nodes, and since his death in 1999, they're just showing his doubles, he told the Tandian newspaper. That's a fascinating story. If Saddam Hussein was really dead and the others were pre-recorded stories, then who was ruling in his place? His sons and his wife and his other children were also there. It fascinated me that the moment the war broke out and England and the United States went in there, that the wife and the children of Saddam Hussein, except the two ruling sons, were taken away and received exile where? But in Great Britain. So the country that attacks takes the family, the whole family of Saddam, and gives them political exile in Great Britain. Very strange. Now, if he was dead and they were putting doubles in front, and they were ruling really through the sons, and they showed these shot-up bodies of two individuals who nobody knows who they really are, who knows whether that is really so or whether that is not so? Despite the reference to Qaza, British intelligence thought the broadcast may have been pre-recorded. This is a fact. We are well aware that he spent many hours recently tape recording various messages. We have to do a little more analysis of what he was actually saying to see whether or not that in fact was Saddam Hussein. British Defense Minister Jeff Hoon told reporters. White House spokesman Ari Fleischer said, I think there are some doubts about whether that tape is canned or whether it's fresh and based on recent events. So both of the Secret Services question these issues. Then they find, finally, Saddam Hussein's hideout, the filthy place, they say, and they arrest the man and show him on national television. After that, one does not hear too much. And he has a magnificent beard. A magnificent beard. Now, if the previous one was shot during the war, then this must be the best hair fertilizer that mankind has ever found. Maybe he could become a multi-zillionaire patenting this fertilizer to make this beard grow as it is. They used at least three doubles. Who knows who this man is? And to say that they did blood tests, who knows whether you can trust the laboratories that did this. Nevertheless, he's listed as a 33-degree Freemason. There are plenty of questions regarding this man, and there is no evidence, except for his family, that he's safely living in exile. Royalty, Prince Bernard of the Netherlands is 300, committee of 300, and here Prince Beatrice and Prince Bertil, the Queen, of course, Prince Philip, all of them high Freemasons. Mengele, Walt Disney, all of these individuals. The world is really run by these individuals. Here is the Duke of Kent giving the Masonic handshake under the Masonic shield. He is the current Grand Master. So he is the highest Freemason at the moment, if you like, because a king may not be or a prince may not be the Grand Master. He is currently the Grand Master. So here is the highest Luciferian in the country at the moment. Political leaders, the Bill Clintons and all of these, we've dealt with them. We don't have to go through all of them again, the Jesse Helms, the Goldwaters, the Al Gores, and all of these individuals. And I've put the pages up there, and there are many, many books that substantiate all of these names. So just about everybody who is important in the world, everybody who runs in the political sphere is involved in these clandestine operations. We saw in the lecture on Revelation chapter 17 and 13 how there would be a holy alliance, and how the United States would eventually become the powerhouse for propagating a new world order. Gorbachev's summit in Malta, referred to as the gateway to the millennium of freedom, as you will remember, and the initiative came for this great movement into a new world order. Now, let us have a look at this video where George Bush has something to say on this issue.
Where institutions of freedom have lain dormant, the United Nations can offer them new life. These institutions play a crucial role in our quest for a new world order, an order in which no nation must surrender one iota of its own sovereignty, an order characterized by the rule of law rather than the resort to force.
So he says all the nations don't have to give up one iota of their sovereignty, but we want them all in a new world order. Basically, that is what he said, out of the horse's mouth. And then this terrible incident took place. And, well, there were many, many deaths. A very strange incident. But before we get to it, let's first have a look at some of the history of this issue. The United States had a problem in that it wanted to introduce anti-terrorism laws, but there was no real terrorism in the United States. And then all of a sudden, a building in Oklahoma, April 19, 1995, was gutted by explosions, and they fingered a man, Timothy McVeigh, who worked alone, they said, and brought this building down by parking a van filled with explosive outside and blowing the building to smithereens. That's the official report. Inside were women and young children, and if anything gets the sympathy of the people, well, then that is surely one of them. Let's have a look at what happened here.
Through federal authorities that a second bomb has been found inside that federal building in Oklahoma City. It was an explosion at 9 o'clock this morning that did that damage you're looking
first
at right
bomb
there.
Getting
that was in the federal building did go off. It did the damage that you see right there. The second explosive was found and defused. The third explosive that was found, and they are working on right now as we speak, I understand, both the second and third explosives, if you can imagine this, were larger than the first. First bomb that was in the federal building did go off. It did the damage that you see right there.
So you heard there on national television that a second bomb went off and it did the damage that you saw over there. They found a third explosive device within the side of the building. The official report, however, says what? That there was a van outside with explosives. Now, I was not there. I was not there. So I'm not going to set myself up as a judge as to what happened over there. I can merely say what the report said, what the news said, and then we'll ask some questions and you decide what happened over there. Timothy McVeigh apparently worked alone, just like in the Kennedy case, and it blew this place up. But eyewitnesses say, no, they saw two individuals, and they saw this truck on a previous day, and they had a number. But when this building exploded, there was no real crater where this truck is supposed to have exploded. Now, if a truck explodes outside the building, there must be a crater, and the building must implode. But the building didn't implode, it exploded. And that was done by a device on the inside, as you heard over here. So now, to fit the case and to say it was a truck, the people said, well, surely if it was a truck, then there must be some parts left of that truck. I mean, an explosion doesn't just get rid of every piece of a truck. It might be in smithereens, but there should be a piece of an engine block or something like that. There was nothing. Eventually, the pressure became so great that a CIA agent jogging four blocks away stumbled over the rear axle of the truck and found it. But the problem was, how do you identify this rear axle as part of that truck? Now, they had a registration number, and fortunately, the number was on the rear axle. Now, nowhere in the whole world do you put registration numbers of vehicles on rear axles. So this is a strange issue. But anyway, he was fingered as the sole one. But there is so much suspicion surrounding this explosion. And then eventually a firm got the contract and they gutted that building before there was any possibility of looking into what happened at that particular event. Then came another event, the Twin Towers. Now what happened after the first event? After the Oklahoma bombing, the United States, within just 5 days, had anti-terrorism legislation. And that anti-terrorism legislation gave powers to the President of the United States where he could suspend the Constitution. But it didn't give powers where the United States could unilaterally enter any country in the world to do as it pleased. For that, it needed a war footing legislation, as was the case with Pearl Harbor. There needed to be an incident. Well, an incident arrived in that the Twin Towers were destroyed. President Bush speaks to the United Nations General Assembly, November 10, 2001.
We must speak the truth about terror. Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
Now, isn't it interesting that George Bush there said, let us not tolerate conspiracy theories that shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves. Why? Because so many people started believing that everything was not right with these particular issues. Now, let's have a look at the first hit. When this happened, the first aeroplane struck.
Tim, your life is going to change, but more important, your son's life is going to change forever. America will never be the same after September 11th.
We've been preparing for this kind of event for nearly a decade. We've had presidential directives. It's a project called Homeland Defense.
We are, as we have been saying this morning, in a...
So what we have footage of the very first airplane striking that building. That means there was an opportunity to record that. Very quickly, the following happened.
Even as the leaders of the Taliban deny any role in this, an Arab journalist based in London is quoted today to the Associated Press as saying that followers of Osama bin Laden warned 3 weeks ago they were going to carry out this sort of an attack.
The chief of safety of the fire department of New York City told me he received word of the possibility of a secondary device. That is another bomb going off. He tried to get his men out as quickly as he could, but he said that there was another explosion which took place. And according to his theory, he thinks that there were actually devices that were planted in the building.
45 minutes into the taping that we were doing, there was an explosion. It was way up where the fire was, and the whole building at that point bellied out in flames, and everybody ran.
I was about five blocks away when I heard explosions, three thuds, and turned around to see the building we just got out of, antenna tip over and fall in on itself.
And then all of a sudden it started like it sounded like gunfire, you know, bang, 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 bang. And then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
All right, so the eyewitnesses said that they heard secondary devices. Bang, 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 and a series of explosions, and then these buildings came down. Demolition experts said that this is exactly what happens in a controlled demolition. You see, when an aeroplane strikes, there was a huge fireball, and the fireball is the burning of all the fuel on board the aeroplane. So there was nothing left there to explode. What was responsible for the secondary explosions? If we look at the setup, you will see there are the Twin Towers, and there are buildings all around. And these buildings were either slightly damaged or not seriously damaged. And then there is a road, and there's another building over there called Building Number 7. And that building came down sometime afterwards, although nothing hit it. And not much was ever said about that. What caused Building Number 7 to implode? Let's watch it.
Okay, now watch
close. 8 hours after the first plane crash, a third building at the World Trade Center collapses. This one, the number 7 World Trade Center building.
This is a look at the flying debris from the number 7 tower. You're going to see that.
Watch the explosion coming this way.
Toward the camera. Number 7 tower at the World Trade Center.
The CIA would have been in there normally, but they had, of course, abandoned the building when the event, the catastrophe occurred.
So who would have been in that building? The CIA would have been in that building, but they had evacuated the building. And 8 hours afterwards, the building comes down in a controlled, it seems, implosion. Now, nothing hit that building. And these are very strange, strange questions that we have to consider. After this event, there was a Canadian response.
And there was a great resolution passed at the United Nations last night that might bring about a new order in the world that would be better for all of us.
All of this was brought upon us in a single day. And night fell on a different world. A world where freedom itself is under attack.
So the Canadian response was, this could bring about a new order in the world as it was decided at the United Nations after a meeting. Gary Hart, what did he have to say?
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once and hasn't been used since, and that is a new world order.
Jim, your life is going to change, but more important, your son's life is going to change forever. America will never be the same after September 11th.
We've been preparing for this kind of event for nearly a decade. We've had presidential directives. It's a project called Homeland Defense.
We are, as we have been saying this morning, in a state of war.
Even as the leaders of the Taliban deny any role in this, an Arab journalist based in London is quoted today to the Associated Press as saying that followers of Osama bin Laden warned 3 weeks ago they were going to carry out this sort of an attack.
The chief of safety of the fire department of New York City told me he received word of the possibility of a secondary device, that is another bomb going off. He tried to get his nucleus, but he said that there was another explosion which...
All right, that's enough. We've seen the buildings coming down. We've heard that while these things were still happening, the American government had fingered the culprits. A bunch of terrorists, naming their names, about 25 of them altogether, and the whole plot had been resolved by the end of the events that unfolded that day. An amazing piece of detective work after the event, while it was even happening. Now, again, let me say, I was not there. So let me tell you what has transpired and what people have said about these issues in the world, what has been published and what is facts that cannot be disputed. And then I don't make a judgment because I wasn't there. You make the judgment based on the facts. This is the story. They say the terrorists were of Arab extraction, and they mentioned the names of the passengers on these aeroplanes, which were United Airlines aeroplanes. And the mastermind behind the scene is a man by the name of Atta, who is fingered as the one who received instruction on how to fly an aeroplane. Well, when they released the names, immediately there was a hue and cry from the Arab countries because five of the terrorists, supposed terrorists, mentioned that they were very much alive and well and couldn't have been on the plane. Right? Very important. They were alive and well and couldn't have been on the plane. How did they know that Atta was the mastermind? You see, on his way to the airport, he had just happened to leave his documents in the taxi that was transporting him. So they had his documentation. Which terrorist would leave his documentation behind? That is the one question. The next point that is very interesting is that they have evidence that he was the man because he wrote a suicide note. This is all fact. This is all published fact, what I'm saying now. I'm not making this up. This is all referenced. This is a fact. You decide the rest for yourself. Now, he wrote a suicide note. And this suicide note, he then placed within his suitcase. And then he handed in the suitcase, as we normally do when we go onto the aeroplane. Now, which person would write a suicide note that was going to be destroyed in an aeroplane clash? Does that make any sense? So the fact of the matter is, they have a suicide note. But now the question is, if he handed in his suitcase to be put on top inside the plane, how come they have the suicide note? Well, just by chance, this is the one suitcase they forgot to put on the plane. And that is how they have his note. How do they know there were Arab terrorists in there? Because a passport. Nothing else survived that plane crash, but a passport fell out, and it happened to be a burnt-out passport, which still could identify one of the terrorists. This is very circumstantial. Now, as these aeroplanes, with absolute precision, struck those twin towers, their black boxes were totally obliterated. These are of titanium and are designed to survive such crashes. There is no evidence of them whatsoever. They have been totally destroyed. So we have a very strange situation. What hit building number 7? Nothing hit it, but it came down in like fashion. And there is plenty of evidence that there were possibly secondary devices in the buildings, as you heard from the commentators themselves. So what about the infrastructure of the aeroplanes? Well, there are certain parts lying there, so there was definitely a situation where those planes hit that particular building, because you have wheels and all kinds of components of the aeroplanes surviving. Even those crashes, with those tremendous explosions, there were parts of these aircrafts everywhere. Every time an aeroplane crashes, there are huge pieces of fuselage and etc. which remain, and they sometimes can fit all these things together, and that was also the case at the Twin Towers. 3 days before those buildings came down, 3 days before, the shares in the airlines had been sold at a turnover such as had not existed ever before. And certain banks bought these. So somebody might have been tipped off that something was going on. And then a very interesting case. There was a man in your country, in Canada, who happened to be in prison. And they had caught him in a gambling situation, and they imprisoned him, and he said, "Let me go. I am clandestinely working for the CIA. I'm an agent. I was investigating money laundering, etc., etc., etc." And they would not let him go. Then he gave the names of his contacts at the CIA. And the CIA was probably embarrassed because of this situation and denied knowledge of it. And he was very angry because he felt he had been stabbed in the back. And this very often happens in this industry. And so he wrote a letter before the September 11 attack outlining some events that were going to take place. And he mentioned that aircraft were going to fly into the Twin Towers and into the Pentagon. Now, nobody made any use of these, but when it actually happened, then this came to the fore. So here was a CIA agent who said ahead of time that this was going to happen. Could be chance, could not be chance. You decide for yourself. A certain Atta, the man who is supposed to have planned this, with only in-flight training, with absolute precision, they went into those buildings. This is an amazing story. Received funds $100,000 from Pakistan's secret society, secret service, into his bank account. And they worked very closely with the United States. So here had been a transfer of money. But the plot doesn't end there. Das Böse sits in Pentagon. Facts. The evil sits in the Pentagon. Now, who is this man that wrote this? This is the political scientist Thierry Meyssan from France. And he has some very interesting to say. Who was it? What happened over here? How come they had all the names of all these people, and yet there is no real evidence that these people were actually on board? Here's the story. I'm just giving it to you. With the passengers, the machines that flew into these twin towers. And then there's this fascinating case of the other aeroplane that went into the Pentagon. And here are the pictures that were published. The dates were strangely wrong. They were September 12, but apparently they said it's because they released them the next day. And what you see is smoke over there. There are no debris pots, nothing. Here is a piece missing, no picture. There you have an impact of a flame, and you have this fireball over here. That's it. If you look then on the lawn, this is all that was found, but no part of a United Airlines aircraft. No parts. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. This is the hole that was seen after the event, and most of this hole happened well after the event. So the question is, why are there no aircraft parts? Again, all the black boxes disappeared. There were no black boxes that survived. And the hole is way too small for something like that to actually have happened. Because nowhere in the world, even in the Lockerbie disaster, there was a case where there were no aircraft parts. Nothing. There was just nothing. What is even more interesting in this situation is when you look at this, when the United States rules the world, the Catholic Church will rule the world. Archbishop Quigley, 1903. Let me go back to this September 11. To rule the world, you have to be able to have access to the entire world whenever you want to, however you want to. Now, this aeroplane that struck the Pentagon and the other one that fell by chance. Did you know about that? The other one that fell. And apparently there were terrorists on board that were overcome by loyal citizens. The interesting part is that that aeroplane struck the ground and never struck any building. It came down. And as it came down, there was a hole in the ground. And the mayor and the first people of that area ran to the place, and here was a hole in the ground, but no aircraft debris. None. None whatsoever. Not the slightest piece. Nothing. So the whole aircraft disappeared into a hole, which was not very large, and there was no debris and no black boxes and nothing. Something like this has never, ever happened ever before. But what is even more sinister is the following. Because the people that had died on the aeroplane, their descendants or their inheritors cannot claim if there is no body. But in the investigation, they identified every single human body with their blood group and body parts that were given to all the family. There were no aircraft parts. There was nothing of that nature found. No aeroplane whatsoever. And yet, they could identify everybody. Does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And there were apparently phone calls between the aircraft and the Pentagon. Such was the information that was released. And the information was that there was a terrorist group, Arab terrorists, that were attacking this place. And the phone call was made with a handy, with a cell phone. But then, of course, they found out that if you make a phone call with a cell phone, then you get an account for that phone call. And there was no record of such a phone call. So the Pentagon backtracked one and said, yes, excuse me, we didn't actually get the phone call from a cell phone. We got it from the onboard telephone. That's how it happened. Again, they did an investigation. If you make a telephone call on an onboard phone, then you swipe your credit card through it, and there must be a record of a credit card transaction from that phone. But there was no record. So the Pentagon backtracked again and said, yes, that is true, but it was done as a collect call. That's why there was no credit card, because the individual had forgotten the credit card. But you cannot make a collect call from an onboard telephone. And there, the story died. So here are four aircraft, no parts except the ones at the Twin Towers. There are holes in the ground and no aircraft whatsoever, but all the pieces of the bodies with the DNA analyses. These are interesting, very interesting facts. They had planned previously in the Bay of Pigs one such operation, apparently, this is history, where they were going to dupe the world by having one aircraft take off, land, the people get out, and then another one, radio control, take off and create the situation that they wanted, without any people on board. This had been done before in the United States. So ask yourself the following questions. How is it possible that all this circumstantial evidence points to nobody out there? Nobody out there. Then came anthrax scares. And when eventually someone high up in politics suggested that it seems to come from a laboratory within, suddenly there was absolute silence. So let us not continue with the September 11 and ask and say it was this or that party. The fact of the matter is this is a very strange situation. And if you look at the high role players in the United States, whether it's Madeleine Albright or any one of them, they use brooches which depict Luciferian connections like goats and all of these. President Clinton here is receiving the host publicly, and he claims not to be a Roman Catholic. That is impossible. Hillary Clinton is wearing the Phoenix Rising, which is a Masonic symbol. Sherry Blair uses Masonic signals. The presidents, the prime ministers of the world, whether the Thatchers or the Carters or the whoever they are, all of them seem to belong to insider organizations, whether they are religious leaders or political leaders, or whether they are Europeans or Americans or Eastern, all of them seem to be involved. So before we continue, let us first contemplate what happens in the Africa situation. But we'll do that in another session.
Okay, guys, that was Professor Walter Veith speaking about the New World Order. The guy's pretty cool. He knows his stuff, doesn't he? This is part one. I will be posting part two in a couple of days. I'm going to let this one fly for a little while so it can be downloaded and digested, and then I will post part two. Not going to make this too long. I did want to mention that I appreciate William S. sent me an email. Appreciate that. He was talking about the 666 podcast and how we were doing the study on Key Z stigma. He sent me a link to a something he typed up on MSN. Did a search for it and found some extra information on that. I appreciate your support, William. And so you guys shoot me an email if you want. I do appreciate that you guys are giving me a little bit of feedback here. Much appreciate it. Because I'm trying to find the truth, trying to study, and send that out there. So when you guys are backing me up and looking for things and send things to me, I appreciate that. But let me wrap this up. Just wanted to give a shout-out to William there. And you guys can contact me at my website. My website for the podcast is truthstream.podomatic.com. All the information's on the right side of the page. If you scroll down, you'll find it. I have a listener comment line. If you want to get jiggy with it, you can actually call in. Let me hear your voice. And, you know, maybe we get something good. I can actually put some of these voice calls on the podcast, you know. And if you have a question, I can do the can actually put the vocals on there of the question, and we can answer it. You know, I'll answer it to the best of my ability. The call-in line is 206-350-0054. And you can email me at truthstream@podomatic.com. And again, the website is easy. It's truthstream.podomatic.com. So, thanks guys for listening, and for giving me some of your time, sharing that with me. I do appreciate it. As always, I will pray for you guys. I do that every day. And I ask that you guys, if you get some time and you think of me, to pray for me as well. And, you know, we're all one body here. If you belong to the body of Christ and you are a believer, we're all one body. We're all brothers and sisters, and we're all facing these trials together. So I love you guys. And just keep me in your prayers. I'll be praying for you guys. I am your host, Amos Ridley. And if I don't see you on this side, I will definitely see you on the other side. Well, it's time to head out. Gotta find my place to rest before the sun goes down. In the darkness of the west, 'cause I rest my head. Would I have to lay upon the stone? If I rest my head, would I lay the rest alone? Well, it's time to head out. Gotta find my place to rest before the sun goes down. In the I'm not